Hello, listeners. This is Janine.
And Stephanie.
And welcome to the Course of Course episode 43. We are moving along, aren't we, Steph?
We are.
So I have a lot to talk about. I know you do, too. I'm going to jump right into it.
Please do.
I have been watching this show that I think has been riveting America. It's called Making of a Murderer. It is on Netflix, and the title doesn't seem very course-specific, but let me tell you, I was watching this thing last night. I'm maybe four episodes into it, and episode two really got me, and I thought, wow, this guy may, in fact, be in his last lifetime because there's an awful lot of forgiveness happening.
Wow.
Like, this is one of those things where Gary Renard, in his books, talk about Jesus and his last forgiveness lesson, which is a crucifixion, which is pretty intense. This particular gentleman in Making of a Murderer, this is legit. This is a documentary series, essentially. But this gentleman, oh my gosh,
Is he a murderer?
I don't know. So he was falsely accused of rape and put into prison for 18 years. DNA evidence basically uncovered the fact that he could not have done it. So he is released.
Okay.
So after 18 years, he's released in 2003, I think. In 2005, he's arrested for murder, and he goes back into jail.
Wow.
But the thing is, this all happened in the same county with the same sheriff and police department. The reason why think that America is so riveted on this is because you can't help but go, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening to that man. And I was thinking about Gary in his books. He talks about karma. And basically, if something happens to you, essentially it's karma. So whenever we experience something that isn't positive, there may be a reason, right? So we're burning off karma from our concurrent lifetime or whatever. So with this gentleman, his name is Stephen Avery. This is a real case. I mean, he's a real person. He's going through this, I don't know what you would call drama, injustice. I don't know yet.
Well, did they find him on the second murder, like at the scene with blood on his hands? Or did they just like pick him up and say, oh, you did this, and it's really injustice?
It's kind of confusing because in a way, it seems like he is framed for the second, you know, crime. The thing is, the murder actually, they found residue bone fragments of the woman, the young girl who's 22, I think, who was murdered on his property. But the confusing part is the evidence doesn't really add up to him doing it. So you watch this stuff. Yes. I mean, after, I don't know, 7 or 8 days of kind of investigating this gentleman's home, all of a sudden on the eighth day, they find the keys to the victim's car just right there in front of everyone on the floor. It's like none of it makes sense. It's very confusing. But regardless of the fact, I just found it amazing that this gentleman has gone through this twice now in this lifetime. To me, it's like, how much more obvious can forgiveness lessons be in your face? Try to forgive kind of like a corrupt sheriff's department and all that kind of stuff. I have enough problems trying to forgive people in our workplace, and they're not doing that kind of stuff.
Do they interview him and he seems like he understands forgiveness even though his circumstances suck?
You know, I think in the first episode of what happened to him where he was unjustly imprisoned for a rape that he didn't do. After he got out, he seemed to be very understanding and he basically was letting stuff go. But the second time, it starts to look a little crazy. And what I found interesting is when I was watching this on Netflix, the thing that came to me all the time was, what would the course say? What would the course say to that man? I wish that I had an audience with him and can maybe have a dialogue with him. Like, what's really happening with you? And let's think a bigger picture here. Why is this showing up as a pattern now? Because it really is.
I mean, that's a script, right? It's just, I mean, it's kind of, I don't know if it's extraordinary, but it's captivating.
Oh, it totally is.
And it's part of his script.
I'm captivated. I think people who are watching this Netflix series, Making a Murderer, are captivated. There's a reason why this somehow has pinged like the zeitgeist right now.
There's some truth
of
in
viewers.
There.
Yeah.
Or I think false truth. But
right. And that was the other thing I was thinking. Oh my gosh, can you imagine kind of being framed for something you didn't do?
That would be horrible.
How do you find forgiveness in that?
Well, if you have the understanding of the course, then you can
agreed
have some
reading the course and having it be a part of my life has allowed me to watch this stuff in a different way, because I would have been like, oh my gosh, this is terrible, and now I'm like, okay, dude, what is it about you that this is happening? Right. What can you learn from this? I never would have approached it in that perspective before.
Does he seem like he's introspective or he's questioning why or...
Not really. What I find also interesting, I guess from a level of form, he doesn't seem very educated, which is unfortunate. There's a lot of judgment going on about that. And he also comes off as, well, he definitely is poor. He's not a wealthy man. So he's got, unfortunately, the stigma of not being wealthy and not having a high intelligence or IQ level. So there's that. Like, I think if he had more of the superficial aspects of being intelligent, educated, having some means, I think he might have been given, I don't know, some leeway or some respect at a base level. But because of who he is currently in this lifetime, it just really didn't come across, which is why I'm so fascinated by kind of watching his story unfold, his forgiveness journey unfold. I don't know if he's to the point yet where he can understand, I need to forgive this, right? I feel like in some way, I know this is very selfish and narcissistic, in his story, he's teaching me.
Okay, so what are you getting from it? Like, I mean, I know you're captivated, but what's the
I love the fact lesson? That it's like watching this person who seems on the surface to be unjustly accused. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've been there before. So there's a little bit of that. And I just want to hug the guy. Like, it's going to be okay. I'm now realizing that we're all part of each other. We were talking earlier about, and I think we talked about this in a previous podcast, we're very much into wine. We were watching kind of wine documentaries. In France, they were talking about how the wine fields, basically the soil, has seen so much.
Kind in the of like, Champagne region.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of World War II bottles, World War I bottles. There's a lot of bloodshed that you kind of get in the soil. The reality is we're all part of each other in some small way or another. Even drinking wine, we are essentially drinking a part of someone else.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy, isn't
it? The thing is, like with Christianity, I know with my earlier religion, Catholicism, we actually drink the blood of Christ, which is basically wine. Right? It's like the symbolism has been there for a long time. I just think the whole thing is fascinating to me. I think it really comes down to we are all one. We see part of ourselves in each other. And I think watching this documentary, that's what really got me. I was starting to see a part of me in him, and I wanted to say it's going to be okay.
Be curious to see where how the story editors take that.
Exactly. All I mean, the way. It's all editing. I recognize that, but there's this part of me that thinks that everything in this Janine experience is there for me anyway. It's so ridiculous, but I don't care. Everything that happens to me on a daily basis, even though I'm watching on TV or going to the gas station, I always feel like, okay, I created it, so that's interesting. Am I trying to learn from this?
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing something like that too, just thinking of whatever's happening in the moment is something I created. And I feel like I've been kind of feeling pain and suffering lately. And even though it's not like a certain illness or a certain husband or a certain family member or whatever, it is with a person, of course, because I'm projecting it. And they're the opportunity for giving the illusion over. Like, I had to remind myself what Gary was pounding into us, that forgiveness is for giving the illusion back over to the Holy Spirit. Ego, I don't buy this shit.
Right.
Or ego, I don't
and
buy this.
And you really need to remember that when stuff is going down.
Yeah. And so when I'm talking to myself about a person and how I feel like, why are they being so mean to me? And why do I feel so bad, so uncomfortable? Like I actually felt pain and suffering. I feel like I haven't always acknowledged that. It's there, but I don't call it pain and suffering. But under, I guess, the course theology or idea or whatever you want to call it, model, they use pain and suffering. And it's like, it is painful and is suffering. And I do feel like that person's doing it to me. And then that's when I got to go, oh, wait a minute. I created this person. It's just more separation. I don't know. I just feel like the last few weeks have been pretty intense.
They've been intense at work?
Definitely at work. Yep. We have a lot going on and a lot of it's very last minute. There's a lot of pushing, a lot of forcing, and it's, I feel like my stomach's upset a lot. I've had headaches.
So how do you kind of make it okay with yourself? Like, how do you find that space.
I feel like right now what I'm holding on to is kind of that Yogananda idea of we have to be the minister of our own church. And so I'm making more effort to center myself in the morning through a little meditation and a deeper one at night. That kind of sets me up for the day and kind of helps transition me at the end of the day.
That's good.
But I also find that because the hours are long and I'm getting home so late, I haven't always eaten, and sometimes I don't even get lunch. I just am noticing how the ego will use things like not getting me food, so my energy is low, so then I'm feeling sick. It's interesting to see how the ego can use circumstances and situations. I just feel like if I can create an inner world that's peaceful and whole and complete, that somehow it's going to get bigger and bigger and flow into that outer world. Even though it's been intense, and I feel beaten down physically, emotionally, spiritually, I feel great. Like, I just feel like, you know what? It's okay. It's just the ego, and I'm strong, and I know it's not real.
I feel that way, too. The Course has given me strength in that. Mm-hmm. I'm not always a perfect Course student, but I do remember it. I have that basic knowledge, which has been huge for me. I did not have that 2 years ago. But I'm also getting a little better at recognizing, okay, it's the ego. The ego still takes over, I'm not going to lie. It owns me sometimes. But the good thing is I can go, oh, come on. There are so many times at work, I'll just start laughing at myself because it's ridiculous. I'll just stop and go, what are you doing? Who cares? It's funny. The ego makes you believe that what you think or feel is the most important thing at that moment, no matter what. This morning, I was having that kind of experience. Mm-hmm. And I looked around and there were people who are lovely and they're laughing. And I thought, what am I doing to myself?
Mm-hmm.
It's self-inflicted pain.
There's this reacting to what's coming at us. And in my mind, I'm reacting it over and over and over and over at night, you know, or like on the drive home or whatever. And it's like, would you just shut up? Like, I don't want to hear this anymore. And that's when I like turn on the Course or do something to shift it. So I feel like the nighttime is my sacred time. And that's when I kind of repair myself right now.
I like what you said, that you kind of repair yourself. I think it is good when you come home from work, when you're kind of settled, to take a moment. Mm-hmm. And get back to who you are and kind of reconnect to Jesus and the Holy Spirit and the Course.
Mm-hmm. I have my Jesus picture I look at, and I made like a new little post-it sign that says, no pain and suffering. I put a little heart, love, HSJ. I thought,
good,
you know what?
You.
You know, they don't want us to suffer.
No.
We have a choice every moment, and I just have to remember to turn it over and choose the Holy Spirit and just not give the emotion to whatever is happening.
We've talked about this before, but I don't think I've ever been this in touch with Jesus ever. And I grew up in a Catholic church. When I was in school, a Catholic school,
wow.
We were there in church Monday through Saturday.
Wow.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
They were indoctrinating you.
Totally. But I never really felt like I was in touch with Jesus as I am now. I mean, it took this long for me to get it. And now I think it's interesting. I used to, you know, it's kind of embarrassing to say this, but I used to sort of make fun of people who were like Jesus freaks. And I was dating a guy years ago who was really into the Bible. I'm not into the Bible, I'll admit that. And I kind of made fun of that. Not in a mean way, but it's just like, oh, come on, really?
Buy that Lotus. Mm.
But what I wish I could go back and tell this person is, you know, I'm really sorry. Now I get it. I just didn't get it before. Not the Bible part, but I totally get the Jesus part. You know, we are talking about Jesus freaks and that concept and stuff. And I am a Jesus freak. You are a Jesus freak. How bizarre is that to admit it?
Jesus,
you know,
freak.
It's weird that being called a Jesus freak had this negative connotation, and now I feel like it's a compliment.
Well, that's because it was identified with that religion and that Bible or that whatever, that Nazarene church I went to where you couldn't have coffee or caffeine.
Oh, forget that.
You couldn't wear makeup. Like, there were all these rules of things you couldn't do.
Well, you're a major sinner then.
I just went there because I wanted to be around young people, and it got me out of my crazy house.
Right. But, so Jesus was your savior in that aspect.
He was. And I certainly challenged all the people in charge there with my ideas.
Me too. I was like the same thing. I was a little combative. Like, I kept saying, do you really believe this is true? This is ridiculous. And now I believe stuff that is just kind of outlandish, but I'm okay with it.
Because it's true.
it's our truth.
Yeah, it's our truth.
But it's took a long time to get to our truth.
Yeah, the ego's definitely done a number on people. I mean, thank God it's really just a blip, but it sure doesn't feel like one.
No. There's been a spate of famous people who have passed away. And I was talking to David my sister, Bowie. And she's like, oh, this is so sad. Like David Bowie, Snape, I can't remember his name, Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Passed away. Uh-huh. Grizzly Adams passed away. Celine Dion's husband passed away. And my sister was all very sad. And I'm like, are you kidding me? They woke up. They woke up. They're not dreaming this crazy dream right now.
Well, they got to end this crazy experience, but they're probably coming back.
Right, but the thing is, we're all gonna die. Like, it's funny, this concept of death and like this dream state. Like, oh no, I want to live forever. This is a crap hole right
this
now.
This is hell.
This is terrible. Really is. Like, why hang on to it?
Yeah, you know, I was driving around and I've had so much anger and so much just like hostility in my being leaving work and driving home. And I was listening to Gary on my player or whatever. And he was talking about you are Christ, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. I thought, you know what? I'm so mad at the world right now. I'm just going to practice this with the world. Okay, world. World, you are Christ. You are pure and innocent. You know, all is forgiven and released. And in that moment, I definitely felt some freedom. And I thought, well, okay, so, and then of course I did it on myself. And it really is just like, we're just all the one, all acting crazy. We're just all acting crazy down here.
It's this bizarre illusion that when we come across somebody who is kind of a jerk or whatever, we really think that they are separate from us and they're a jerk. The reality is they're not separate from us. And if they're a jerk, then we're a jerk. It's a lot to take in. And it takes a while, I think, mentally and emotionally to embrace that.
And like, I created that jerk to try and trick me to think that they're a jerk when really it's just all one. Like, it's not real. Yeah.
The other thing I'm having challenges with is I can't really have these conversations with a whole lot of people because I can't go up to my special relationship. He's not really a jerk because it's really me. That is a non-starter. That is a non-starter. I cannot have a conversation with him, right? But I have to think it. There's a part of me that's a little sad that we don't have like a bigger circle in which we can converse about this stuff with.
Yeah, it would be nice if more people on the planet.
Or just in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, we are lucky. There are a few, I will say.
You know, the other night I was thinking about I am love, I am light, because that's something I've repeated my whole life to myself, but it's taking on a different kind of meaning. And when I think of love and light, I just really think of heaven. So I'm trying to think of in moments of being in heaven, projecting down this identity of Stephanie, who's just there to do service, and all the other little splits. And we're all really just the love and the light.
I know that you had talked previously in other podcasts about this friend of yours who has a slight mental illness. What's an update on him?
Yeah, I actually heard from him several times today. I'm right in the chapter because I'm rereading the teacher's manual about magic. And he's definitely into a lot of magic, whether it's crystals or it's numbers or it's, he finds symbolism in a lot of things. And the course was saying to not attack it. I was trying to embrace it and be like down with it and like, yeah, okay. But it got really out there, you know, from knowing Ringo Starr to he kept dropping all these celebrity names. And
I think the last podcast you said that he kept finding stones or something on the streets.
Yeah, like little glass. When you do a flower vase in the pot, a lot of times they'll put little rocks
there's
in
little
there.
Glass stones. Yeah, they decorative
keep,
glass stones.
Keep the flowers in the position you want for your design. He'd find those.
I see.
He's definitely out of his mind, but I feel right now it's because of drugs. So he go, you know, the mental illness often pulls people into drugs.
Sure.
And then they are off them and they're still mentally ill. And it's just, I'm trying to practice seeing him as perfect love.
I think people who have those in their life, whether they're friends or family, who are under the influence of some psychotropic drug or whatever, I can imagine that it can be a challenge. Kind of remembering that they're God, even when they're kind of in the throes of the addiction. And separating themselves and saying, look, it's okay. They're not a bad person. They're just happen to go through something. Right. That takes a lot of forgiveness, I think, in that moment.
I think the hardest part for me is he wants to talk for like 15 or 20 minutes, and that just about every other sentence is a different subject, and he's just so all over, but he's very like, are you listening to me? You know, what do you think of this? And but as soon as I start to say something, he cuts me off and he just keeps, it's like he's emptying his barf bucket on me.
But what do you think he represents for you?
Just mental illness happens. It happens here, but it's, again, it's not real. It's just another device of the ego that he isn't really that person. He's not really, all of this is just not real.
It's interesting, the people in our lives that kind of provide us with these different perspectives on things and what we do with them. I think everybody experiences somebody in their life who drives them crazy, or they're just insane, or they're just somebody that represents annoyance or discomfort. Like, why are we producing that in a lifetime? You're producing him in your Stephanie lifetime. What is the purpose of that?
You know, I'm almost now thinking that I'm supposed to be helping the mother.
Oh, his mother.
Yeah.
Your friend's mother. I kind of feel like your special relationship at work is sort of like a shining light for me. It's a bit of, she did it, I can do it now.
Mm-hmm.
She's already done it. How are things going with that, your special relationship at work?
Well, like I said before, I think it's shifted into holy. Like, it's still really...
It's maintaining that.
It is. It is. I mean, I kind of expect there'll be moments when, of course, it shifts down. But I feel like we have shifted up, like a stick shift. How about that?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm transforming. It's just a little slower for me. Mm. One of the challenges I have, I mentioned this before, you know, I interact with hundreds of people a day, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And when you have that kind of volume, there's a lot of crazy in there. So it's understanding that it's okay, that there are going to be some people that tweak me.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, I think I'm doing much better with it. I'm still waiting for that moment where it's like a watershed, where I go, okay, now I get it. I'm going to get it intellectually. It's very easy to kind of be tweaked during a work environment, like 8 hours a day, somebody who's really getting you. In my experience in the work environment, ego is so huge. It's understanding that and kind of like appreciating and letting it go. Because, you know, in a hierarchical organization, like a work environment could be, I work for a big company now. I work for a Fortune 10 company.
Wow.
So this is massive, right? So the hierarchy is a little intimidating. And when you start thinking, I'm an important person and I have the fate of, you know, hundreds of people in their career in my hands, inevitably you're going to get people who sort of abuse that power. And it's being able to like step aside and realize what's going on and not getting too engrossed in it. It's a slow process for me, but I am so appreciative of the Janine lifetime that I created these opportunities for me to transcend it. Not there yet, but my God, now that the course has come into my life, I can't imagine how I could get through this without it.
Me either. It would blow my mind to even, I mean, I wouldn't be here, I feel.
I agree. I think that I would just be overwhelmed and depressed. I don't know how I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it came to me at the right time. I was open at the right time. Timing is everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's our script.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for the course, for Helen Schuckman, for everybody who helped the course to be published and out there, and to Gary Renard and Cindy and
mm-hmm.
these amazing people who have talked about the course and got it out there for me to at least consume on my level.
We created that too. It's like we created Jesus, like we're all part of that oneness. And thinking from that oneness, it's a much better place.
Absolutely.
Than being
so
here.
Let's talk about the excitement next week. Is the
Cindy and Jackie.
It's the Cindy and Jackie workshop. It's going to be at the Mystic Journeys bookstore.
Yes.
It's from 2 to 6 on Saturday if anybody's in Los Angeles area or the greater LA area, San Diego, San Francisco, whatever. This is going to be a good one. I think this is the first time Cindy has gone on her own apart from Gary. Gary Renard may be there. We're not sure. I can't tell you how excited I am because it's like these two powerful women coming together and saying, hey, we're going to do this experience together. And our good friend Mikey Lemieux is going to be there. Giddy
Yay,
up, Mikey.
Giddy up, Mike.
Which is fantastic. So those listeners who are really interested in meeting Giddy Up Mike, the author of Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish, he is going to be there on Saturday from 2 to 6.
And we're going to have a fun weekend hanging out.
A fun weekend, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if there's anyone who actually listens to our podcast that is in the greater LA area, in San Diego, San Francisco, wherever, we would love to meet you.
Yeah,
we're going to be there.
Just hunt us down.
Just hunt us down.
Or go on our Facebook and do a message.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It will be fun. And then maybe we can have dinner together. We can have lunch. I don't know. Who knows how this is going to unfold?
Yeah. But I think it is magical that one of my best friends just happens to be driving down. It's going to happen to be in Venice. I just happen to have an extra ticket. She's going to join us.
The thing is, it all works out the way it should.
And
right?
She's got Gary's DU book next to her bed.
And she's reading it. And she's
actually
watching,
rereading it.
And she's watching YouTube videos and stuff. That's fantastic.
Yay, someone in my inner circle.
Is she listening to our podcasts?
She doesn't know. Or she knows about them, I think, but no.
Oh, I see.
But maybe that might be the next step.
Maybe we can convert her. You never know. All right, do you have any final words, Stephanie?
Just peace to my mind. Let all my thoughts be still.
Amen. Thank you, everyone, for listening to our podcast. We'll be back in a couple weeks for the Course of Course, episode 44. It's been a pleasure, and we can't wait to give you a recap of the Cindy and Jackie workshop.
Yeehaw.
All right. Have a good night, everyone. We'll see you soon.